If students come to school tired and sick, hungry, worried, they're not going to learn. As adults, we're not going to learn either. We're not going to be able to pay attention if we're suffering from all those conditions. The chronicness of some of the students' lived experiences is what is really challenging then for teachers and for school leaders.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Highest Aspirations, an education podcast focused on providing educators with inspiration and strategies to help multilingual learners achieve their highest aspirations. I'm your host, Steve Sofronis. Well, we made it to the last episode of season 12, and I couldn't be happier with our guest and the topics we covered. Dr. Sonia Soltero has been a contributor and collaborator in our community since the very beginning, and every time I think I have a complete understanding of the scope of her work, she tells me another great thing that she is doing. When I heard about her collaboration with Chicago Public Schools to help support newcomers, I knew I had to bring her on again to share that experience with others. We cover a lot of ground in this conversation, but we focus on why educators need additional support and training to address the social-emotional needs of their newcomers and migrant students. Also, a framework educators can follow to ensure they are addressing the variety of students' needs in their instruction. And finally, how we can leverage partnerships with universities and colleges to better prepare educators to work with multilingual learners. And obviously, there is much more. Dr. Sonia Soltero is professor and chair of the Department of Leadership, Language, and Curriculum and former director of the Bilingual Bicultural Education Graduate Program at DePaul University in Chicago, Illinois. Dr. Soltero has numerous publications on bilingual education, English learners, and Latino education, having been involved with dual and bilingual education for more than 30 years as a dual language teacher, university professor, professional developer, and researcher. She has an extensive background in design and implementation of dual language and bilingual programs and has worked with school districts as well as bilingual universities all across the United States. As I mentioned, that is a wrap on season 12. It was a really special season for me, and we will be back for season 13 with some pretty interesting changes coming in August of 2024. Until then, on behalf of all of us at Elevation, we hope that you have a wonderful summer, that you have a chance to rest and recharge, and I hope that you enjoy this conversation with Dr. Sonia Soltero. I know I did. As always, thanks for listening to Highest Aspirations. Dr. Sonia Soltero, welcome back to Highest Aspirations. What is this, the second or third time?
I believe so. Yes. Thank you for inviting me back.
Yeah, it's good to see you again. And as usual, this is something that we talked about a long time ago back at the Elevation Summit in November. We're talking about we have to get back together and do a podcast again. And here we are recording this as we close out the first week of May. So we get there eventually, but it takes a while.
Yes. Happy to be here.
So we've talked before about a variety of topics. And one of the things when we were thinking about, like, how could we get together and talk about something different, something sort of unique, is in addition to everything else you're involved with, and you've been doing some work with Chicago Public Schools to help them better serve their migrant students and families. And I love this idea and this process of these kinds of partnerships with between universities and school districts. Can you give us a general idea, number one, of kind of what are the main challenges that they're facing, and then what you're doing to help and how this partnership materialized?
So I used to teach in Chicago Public Schools, and then I went to DePaul University, and I have maintained contact and have worked throughout the years with Chicago Public Schools, collaborating particularly with their dual language programs. More recently, this partnership kind of evolved in a very organic way. The chief officer of the Office of Language and Culture in Chicago Public Schools, we started doing meetings in probably around October or so of last year, in response to the newcomers. The quite large influx of newcomers coming to Chicago Public Schools and other places around the Chicago metro area, but in particularly Chicago Public Schools. And it originated because there was a faculty who was serving, who has their kids in one of the schools. I was trying to see how we could support by donations or anything else that we could do. So we started meeting with the chief officer. And from that emerged this partnership around Number one, how we could we immediately support besides donations and those kind of things. And so one of the things that I had that I suggested and that I did took on is to do some pro bono professional development for particularly targeting Gen Ed teachers around what to do, sort of like what the teachers were at a loss around, this influx. And so these professional developments that I did pro bono for a few months revolved around understanding newcomer context, the chronic trauma, and how to sort of combine the Maslow's hierarchy of needs and take that into account as a primary responsibility that we have to make ensure that students feel safe emotionally and physically. And then how to incorporate at the same time their academic needs. And doing so in a way that takes into account where these students are coming from. And so, the idea of the pressures that teachers feel about getting kids up to speed quickly, for some of these students, that's not the primary concern. The primary concern is to provide the academic and rigorous instruction and learning opportunities, but also taking care of their social emotional well-being. So from that, we also started a partnership on how to increase teacher knowledge around bilingual and ESL practices and theories and research. And so Chicago Public Schools has partnership with several universities. We were not one of them, but now we are, where they reimburse teachers who are interested in pursuing bilingual ESL endorsement half of the tuition. So, and from that, we began that, and then we had another partnership with one of the networks in school in the Chicago Public Schools with an on-site cohort of teachers pursuing their ESL endorsement.
Got it.
So all of this is been very timely and very needed. So, and now we have a new partnership with the state of Illinois has policy that any counselor, psychologist, speech pathologist who takes a special assessment on ELLs can get the bilingual special ed endorsement. And so, the district pays for full tuition for that particular course. So we're starting that in the summer, which I think is very critical for psychologists and school counselors and speech pathologists to sort of understand the academic part of the equation in how they conduct and interpret assessment results for newcomers and English language learners. So that's where we are, and we're excited and thrilled to participate and be able to contribute in however way we can to do this work collaboratively.
And you just laid out, I think, kind of the structure of the whole thing. You talked a lot about, I think what we're getting at here is that teachers always want to do the right thing. They want to support their students. You said the pressures of getting them to where they need to get academically, but also the idea of bringing Maslow in and making sure students' social emotional needs are met so that they can learn. You talked about the trauma, and then how these partnerships kind of come together. I want to like try to tease out a few of the things you said and get into a little bit more detail, because these things don't just happen by sort of talking about a plan. You need to implement them, and they need to kind of work out with everyone. One thing that I think is really important, you just ended by talking about the counselors and the speech pathologist, who oftentimes, including and along with Gen Ed teachers and sometimes even principals, are not sometimes the sort of target audience for these kinds of programs. And if I'm wrong, jump in, but like in my experience, I see people working directly with EL specialists and admins, which is fine and good. How so your this approach is clearly different. It's really connecting with everybody. What are there by starting that way instead of kind of like getting there or having it be turnkey with EL specialists, then training others? What results do you hope that yields? And or what have you seen so far by taking that approach, by speaking with really bringing everybody in right at the beginning?
I think so. We really are in a critical moment here. We've always been in a critical moment, but now with the influx of newcomers and they're coming from different parts of Latin America with different practices and norms and all of that, that all educators and support staff understand not just the linguistic component, but the cultural component and also the traumatic events that any person, any child, any family moving from one place to another is often traumatic. And more so if it's moving from one country or one region of the world to another and coming to a place that is not always welcoming. And that's the reality of most countries, right? So there's not everybody is embracing newcomers or embracing migrant populations. So it's critical that we have that we create and develop a common base of understanding around not just the needs, but around what we as adults and educators should and can do to ameliorate the challenges that students and their families come to school with. And in order to do that, we need to have more knowledge. And so knowledge building, capacity building is very critical. Because, oftentimes the bilingual ESL teachers are sort of a bit on the margins and they do their thing and everybody else does their thing. And so this integration and knowledge and really what I call a school-wide and a district-wide approach to language learner education.
And I think that's, thanks for getting to that. I think that's really important. And, understanding the lived experience of students to the extent that we can do that so that we can, you use the word ameliorate some of the challenges that they're facing is crucial. So I want to ask kind of a two-part question. One, how have, what strategies or professional development experiences have you seen that work in that way? Like what is an approach that resonates with educators and allows them to understand that? And then the second part of the question is really about like, what about their own social emotional needs? Like teachers who are sometimes taking
Absolutely.
on the trauma of these students,
Absolutely.
and or they're so incredibly busy with so many things that this could be just that one more thing that has this like emotional toll as well, that's sometimes more difficult than the academic pressure. I don't know if there's a question there, but I'm curious about both of those.
So let me start with the latter one around the social emotional well-being of teachers and educators, and we do take on the trauma of our students because we care so much. And it's really critical. As we know already, in the last 15, 20 years, there's been this teachers not going into the profession or leaving the profession because of the pressures, of the demands. And this is one additional demand to have to care for and protect and allow students who come with a lot of trauma to flourish in our
And
classrooms and our
by the way,
schools.
I'm gonna just interrupt for one second. I think it's really good and honest that you said that it is indeed one more challenge, and it is a challenge. It is not easy to do. I only say that because I think sometimes, and I'm certainly guilty of this too, sometimes we take an idealistic approach of what a gift it is to have students from everywhere. And it is a wonderful gift. And, but it is also, we have to also honor and understand the fact that for many teachers who do not have experience working with this students that come from many, many places and that have that trauma, that it is an additional challenge on their plate. And so thank you for putting it that way. I really appreciate it.
And it's a challenge because then we need to then have more education around and preparation around how to manage and how to address and how to help students to get to a place where they feel emotional and physical safety. Because we know, and I was a teacher for many years, that after 3 o'clock or whenever the school day is over, there's very little that we can do. So to me, I always, when I was a teacher, and now I tell educators, do the best you can in the 6, 7 hours that you have the children in front of you, and make them feel welcomed and address to the extent possible their lived experiences that weigh on them. So, we know that if students come to school tired and sick, hungry, worried, they're not going to learn. As adults, we're not going to learn either. We're not going to be able to pay attention if we're suffering from all those conditions. So the chronicness of some of the students' lived experiences is what is really challenging then for teachers, and for school leaders. So when I presented in CPS and in other places, I think about the whole child. So in terms of, I sort of created this kind of very simple framework about newcomer English learners and creating a linguistic, cultural, and socially responsive education. That first of all, to me, the first step, we have to connect with the students at a human level first. That's the very first thing we have to do. They're young human beings. We have to understand their social emotional needs. We have to understand their health needs, so physical health, but also social emotional. Understand their housing circumstances. So some of these students and their families are in shelters. Others, for a time in Chicago, they were living in buses because there weren't enough shelters. Others are homeless. Others are with extended family in a one bedroom apartment or house. So all those things impact learning and how they deal with education when they come to school. Connect with parents and families, of course, creating welcoming school and classroom environment. And what does that mean? We can go into that. And then after all those things, then, and it can be parallel, then we have to understand determining their background knowledge. What do they come knowing? So we can't make assumptions that they come as blank. We have to identify and determine their literacy in their first language and their literacy level in reading and writing in their first language. Determine their language proficiency levels. And then as we understand all of those things, then we can start creating the kind of instruction that addresses their academic, linguistic, and social emotional needs. So, creating instruction that includes language objectives around their language proficiency levels, always modifying student output, what we require from them in speaking and in writing or in demonstrating their knowledge in various ways. It can't just be paper, pencil, and writing because they may not have sufficient language. And then we need to modify how they're able to demonstrate that knowledge and their development of knowledge. So we need to make all these kinds of adjustments, but not just adjustments across the board, but adjustments according to the students that teachers have in front of them.
I mean, and teachers, educators, school systems need support to be able to do that, both in this case from collaboration with the expertise that you all bring, but also when you think about, I'm never on here to sort of pitch Elevation's products, but whatever system that you're using to make sure that you can access that data quickly, on who students are, where they come from, what they're doing, what they bring, is important. If you're running around with different colored manila folders to try to get things organized, it makes things really, really, really difficult. And
And I
it's still
wanted to
really.
answer the other question about the PD. Of course, we
Oh,
know
yeah.
professional development is always best when it's long term over a period of time, not just like coming in at one time and doing something. But as this is something that Chicago schools did in the 4 sessions that I did, is that they asked the participants who signed up to provide a number of questions, and then they send those to me, questions and concerns, and that changed what I presented. So based on what the participants, the teachers that signed up and the school leaders, I got feedback before the presentation. So that
Personalized.
container, And so one of the things that I discovered in that, because this happened around between December and March, is that the teacher comments were a little frantic about, I don't know what to do to get the kids up to speed. Can you give me strategies on getting them on, up to speed?
Like
And
academically up to speed?
up academically. And I sense this
The pressure.
panic and pressure. And I talked to them about, we can't function under a triage, that we have to, the triage mentalities, that we have to immediately, put a what do you call it, a catheter or whatever it's called, on the wound, and just stop it from bleeding, and then addressing, and take a more gradual, a more tailored, methodical, long-term approach, because this takes time, and not put those pressures on us as teachers that we have to solve this problem. And the first thing is, because unfortunately we have an education system that is very focused on discrete skill orientation and a little bit of rote learning and all of that, whereas this more gradual, tailored, methodical, and long-term approach is what is more linguistic and cultural responsive and sustaining for students, because it's going to take time.
And we talked last time about this like connection with the healthcare, which I don't know a whole lot about, but I see it as really similar. Like you are sick, maybe you talk to a doctor quickly, or you go to an urgent care place and they give you some antibiotics and that's it, and hopefully the antibiotics work and that's it. But the antibiotics actually are, taking care of whatever's wrong with you, but that it might also be doing more damage, ruining your gut or whatever the case may be, over time. And because you don't have really like an understanding of what the symptoms are coming from, right? Like you can't just treat the symptoms. It's not going to work over time. You got to figure out what the root cause is. And I think a lot of what you talked about at the very beginning is addressing the root cause. But just like a doctor who maybe has way too many patients to deal with, who gives somebody an antibiotic when they really could spend a little bit more time figuring out what these symptoms are coming from. It sounds like what you're saying is in, and I think I've seen this in my own practice, is that we are putting band-aids or applying antibiotics in situations where we really need to be taking a long-term approach. But that long-term approach requires time, it requires resources, it requires an understanding from everyone involved. And so in this particular situation, you have some of the best with you and others from DePaul and other universities in Chicago collaborating to do this work. I'm interested in learning, like, clearly you're doing very good work there. Is this approach happening anywhere else to your knowledge? Is this kind of same thing happening, or are you hoping to expand this in some way by just showing people what you're doing? Or like, what's the next step of making this happen on a more, on a wider basis?
I think it's probably happening everywhere, because school districts are, they'll welcome any help from anyone, and particularly from university partners. University partners are critical, in that universities are the ones that provide the teacher preparation and have, very close connections typically with the area school districts. So this partnership and continuing the partnership is critical. I think it's the way to me to expand these kind of partnerships is to begin with relationships between school leaders and district leaders and university colleges of education, and really involve all of the constituents to provide that and plan together. So I think it's a very important partnership.
And we've talked about it before. It always seems to be, though, related to, and this is kind of the next question I want to get to, not always, but a lot of the partnerships seem to be related to making sure that we have highly qualified bilingual teachers in the classroom. I've seen a lot of collaboration there between universities and school districts. I don't know the success rate of that. I know there's a lot of approaches to that, but that kind of leads me to my next question, which is, and I don't want to get into a whole different challenging topic here, about shortage of educators, but when we are dealing with a shortage, particularly bilingual teachers, number one, was that something that you saw in Chicago Public Schools, and
Absolutely, yes.
I figured. So how have you been, does the professional development sort of over time allow this to scale, or what are the other elements to make this happen
Yeah,
given
I
the
think,
shortages?
in a perfect world, every single teacher in the US would have an ESL, at minimum an ESL endorsement. Bilingual endorsement, yes, if the educators are bilingual and biliterate. It should be fundamental. In at DePaul University, a long time ago, maybe, I don't know, 15, 16, 18 years ago, the early childhood department program decided to have all their students who were doing their major in early childhood education, they had to have their minor in ESL bilingual education. They no longer had an option to choose a minor, but they had to pursue the bilingual or ESL endorsement. And that way, the students graduating from with their master's degree, with their bachelor's degree, with the endorsement already. An endorsement in most states, not all states, are six, five, six, seven courses that is specifically related to English learners. And so, in a perfect world, every single teacher should have at minimum an ESL. So that's a lot of good preparation that really prepares them for including the needs of language learners in their classrooms.
Absolutely. Rather than having to retrofit it in later, which is really
And
hard to do.
I completely understand it's more money and it's more work. Unless it's embedded, like we do at DePaul, in the minor, that you have to take a minor as an undergrad. So, colleges of education could say, and I'm talking about elementary because high school, they have to take their minor, high school teacher prep programs have to take their minor in their concentration. But at least for elementary and early childhood, this is a dual thing that doesn't cost more money or more time.
I feel like I used the word retrofitting a minute ago, and I feel like that's what we try to do, is sort of retrofit these into place after it's not too late, but it would have been a lot more convenient to have some exposure to those kinds, that kind of coursework and research methodology beforehand. I mean, I think back when I started teaching by accident. So I had almost, I mean, I had had very, very little experience. And I think about those first 3 years in particular, and how much more effective I could have been had I had the experience. And at that time, a program like the one that you're talking about would have been very helpful for me. And it took a lot, like, for me to survive those first 3 to 5 years, really. And
You're
then
right, because I think, I'm always reflecting in back at, I think my third year teaching is when I was like, I think I'm better now. I know exactly what I'm doing. The first couple of years coming out of, you're young, coming out of college, it's quite a learning curve, even with the best preparation.
Oh, sure. And to go back to this idea of sort of Maslow and getting in relationships, I think what got me through and what made me marginally successful perhaps at teaching in those first few years was building relationships with students and other educators, because it was survival. It was very clear to me that, like, there's no way that I'm going to get these high school juniors and seniors who are just a couple years younger than me to do what we hope to get them to do. And starting particularly in the middle of the year, unless I understand who they are a little bit as people and rely on the people around me to help. And I think I was just in a situation where that somehow happened naturally to me, and I don't know why, but there are many people for whom it did not, and who are no longer in the classroom and should be, because they are wonderful teachers.
Exactly. So one other thing I wanted to make a comment about, I just got numbers. I don't know if this is last week. We now have 88,000 English language learners in Chicago public schools. And so that's like a huge influx. So basically one third, a little bit, maybe one quarter, close to one third of students in Chicago schools are English learners. But that's huge. In some way, and thanks to the English learner influx, we are back now to the third largest district in the US. We were down to the fifth place because a lot of families were leaving Chicago. actually. And so it has given us this wonderful opportunity to embrace new communities. And it's extremely exciting because a lot of our newcomers are coming from Ecuador and Venezuela and Colombia, and where typically that was not the case in the past, more Central America and Mexico and the Caribbean. So it's a fascinating opportunity for everyone, including the students themselves.
I think it's important to bring that up. We talked a lot about the challenges, and we did not ignore the fact that it is a challenge, but also it's really important to just talk about the opportunity and what that brings to not only schools, but the community and the city and the region in general. And worth mentioning that some of those one third of students at Chicago Public Schools and their families will move outside of the city to more suburban areas who maybe don't have now at this point as many multilingual learners as Chicago does. And so that number will continue to disperse and grow in other places, which is why it's so important when we talk about early preparation, you know, in a college program, et cetera, so that we have teachers who are not only prepared, but excited, I think, to do this work.
And you just use the which is now the current label that I'm not using, but I will start using, is multilingual learner.
I don't know if it's current enough. I never know which one it is, but I've
It
that's
is so the Office of Language and Culture is changing their name to the Office of Multilingual Learners and Culture, I think, because multilingual learners, I think, it encompasses a broader perspective of multilingualism rather than a focus on English. So I'm going to stop saying English language learner.
Of the ones I've heard, you know, it's alphabet soup with all these
Yes,
acronyms.
it is.
That's kind of the one that I feel best about. It doesn't always, you know, hit the SEO algorithm when you're writing a blog post or whatever, but we
Right.
still at Elevation, we typically were like, you know, it doesn't matter. We're going to use the right word,
But
that
I
we
do
feel.
like multilingual learner because even after the students, English learners, like you're an English learner until you become English proficient, and then that's
That's
it.
it. Yeah.
You're and but a multilingual learner, even after you become proficient in English, you're still a multilingual learner.
You're a
So
lifelong multilingual learner.
exactly.
Great. Well, I think we covered a lot of ground. Obviously, there's a lot that folks can learn more about. We're never going to cover everything in the 40-ish minutes or so. But I just wanted to ask you, is there anything that we didn't get to that I didn't mention that you wanted to either emphasize or talk to people about before we call this a wrap?
So as we finish the school year, teachers really have to take care of themselves and resiliency, and don't leave the profession, please. Recharge batteries. It's the end of the year. It's very difficult. Everyone's tired. The world is on fire right now. And seek support in your friends in education. And we all have to support each other. And being a bilingual ESL teacher and a special ed teacher, it has additional pressures and demands. So it's a tough job, but if we love it, we stay even in spite of the difficulties and the challenges and the low pay and all of that. So just a word of encouragement that let's stick with it to the extent possible.
I love it. And I'm just going to emphasize that self-care piece. I think that's so important and something that we tend to not be very good at as educators. So hopefully that people will take time, as you said, to recharge their batteries. All right. So we just scraped the surface as usual, Dr. Soltero, but I want to ask you, how can people learn more about the work that you're doing just in case they want to read a book that you've been a part of or look at whatever sort of work that you're doing? What's the best place to go?
Sure. I don't have a website, but I'm on the DePaul website. But I would recommend this book, the Handbook of Dual Language Bilingual Education, that just came out last year. And it's what I call a brick. I don't know if you can see it, it's quite thick. But it's wonderful, not cheap, but it has 40 plus chapters. So everything you could want to read about or learn about. It's in this wonderful compilation of excellent authors. And I have chapter six is my chapter on dual language building blogs. But I highly recommend. Wonderful, wonderful book.
Great. That is not one I have on my bookshelf, but it might be in the office bookshelf. I'm not sure if we have that one yet, but I'll have to check it out. And we will link to that as well so folks can find it. And so, anyway, long time coming, as I mentioned at the beginning, but I'm really glad we had a chance to do this. And
Yes.
hopefully, folks learned a little bit about some of the great things that can happen when just kind of zooming out a little bit when universities collaborate with school districts. This is happening, obviously, in a very large district in Chicago that has many initiatives like this, but you know, the more that I chat with people, the more I realize that we're in this together. There is definitely a mutually beneficial way to collaborate. And so I hope folks are inspired to take that next step and maybe reach out to a local university, start developing those relationships, and just see what's possible because we do need help and help is out there and sometimes underutilized.
And it's a symbiotic relationship with colleges of education and teacher preparation. So thank you for the opportunity to chat about this today.
Yeah, of course. And it was it's always great to chat with you, Sonia. This will probably be the last one that we do together. More on that coming later, but I just want to say before we go, it's been so great collaborating with you over the years. I find your approach to be grounded. I don't think you're a person who gets too sort of hyped up about the next thing. I think that you take your time to really think about it, which I really appreciate and respect about you. And I think most importantly, like on a personal level, you're just so easy to work with, humble, willing to share. And so for that, I just want to say thank you and really appreciate all the work that you're doing.
Thank you so much. Very kind of you. And say likewise.
Thanks for listening to Highest Aspirations. If you liked our show, please be sure to join the ELL community at elevationeducation.com/ELL community, where you'll find all the episodes of Highest Aspirations and other resources to help educators maximize the impact on their English language learners. Also, let us know how we're doing by writing a review on iTunes or wherever you listen to your podcasts.